Welcome back to the program. There's a wonderful quote about travel from T.S. Eliot who said, "We shall not cease from exploration, and at the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time." The same might also be said of understanding the people we travel with, even if they are our own family members. After all, how much have you learned about other members of your family from those family vacations? My guest today, esteemed journalist and writer Buzz Bissinger, took a journey with his son that would indeed land him back where he started, but truly knowing his son for the first time. Buzz Bissinger is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author of 4 books, including the New York Times bestsellers 3 Nights in August and Friday Night Lights. He's a contributing editor to Vanity Fair, a sports columnist for the Daily Beast. He's written for the New York Times, the New Republic, and many other publications. It is my pleasure to welcome Buzz Bissinger here to talk about Father's Day, a journey into the mind and heart of my extraordinary son. Buzz Bissinger, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Delighted to have you here. First of all, tell us about Zach. He was a twin and the second born of the twin.
Zach was the second born of the twin by 3 minutes. The boys were born in 1983. They were 13 and a half weeks premature. Jerry, the biggest, weighed 1 pound and 14 ounces. Zach weighed 1 pound and 11 ounces. And, you know, those 3 minutes defined a lot of lives. In particular, Zach, he had oxygen deprivation because of the trauma of his birth, and as a result, suffered tragically some trace brain damage.
And Jerry went on and has led a pretty normal life. Went off to college and has been a success by most contemporary standards.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry is a miracle unto himself in that he had no residual effects. Because just to set the time frame, in 1983, right, male twins born that prematurely and that early died. I mean, that's just the way it was. It's a miracle those boys survived, and it's a miracle that Jerry had no side effects. He's now a full-time teacher. He got his master's in Penn from education. He's getting his PhD at night at Temple, owns his own home, he hates it when I say this, but he has a really hot girlfriend. You know, he's doing all the things a parent wants their child to do. He's moving up the ladder, and he's doing it beautifully, where Zach is, you know, his mental comprehension is roughly at an 8 to 10-year-old level. He does work menial jobs, and he's very, very verbal, but he will always, in a sense, you know, be stuck in time.
When did it become clear to you that there were issues as far as Zach was concerned?
Oh, we just knew from the very beginning, because the doctors were really was uncharted ground for them. You know, 26 and a half weeks was extremely early. It's different today, but you could just tell from this freneticism and even the sort of sense of puzzlement about what to do to keep him breathing that there was no way he was going to go through this without having side effects. So it was no surprise, you know, that he was late in kind of every developmental milestone, and we knew it was going to be, you know, a long road. Now, as I say, he's verbal. He has no physical problems, but you know, the comprehension is very, very low, so he's been in either special schools or self-contained schools all his life and did have a lot of early intervention before he reached school age. So we knew that he was going to be a very, very different child than, you know, what I had ever imagined.
And talk about what you imagined and what you had hoped for and how you process this as Zach began to develop.
Well, I remember when my wife at the time, you know, said, "Hey, I'm pregnant with twins," and I was euphoric. I mean, I sort of said, "My God, I'm going to have twins. That's so cool." And you know, they're going to be the same in so many ways, with little bits of differences here and there. I mean, I was giddy. I was just running around. And you know, the expectation is that they would follow, in a sense, in my footsteps. I came from a family of great privilege, but also great ambition, in which success was very, very important. And you know, there was. It wasn't really the fantasy, because all parents live through their kids, that they would be on that same pathway. And, you know, even, as I said, really before the birth, I just knew that vision and that dream had exploded. And processing it, you know, it goes up and down. And at times, you could not help but admire Zach for his strength and his will in wanting to survive. On the other hand, he had a twin brother who was doing beautifully and progressing up the ladder, as I said, and Zach was often stuck. And there were moments, it never had anything to do with love, because I loved him to death, but there are moments of frustration and pain and silent rage and, you know, why did this happen to me and what did I do to make it happen, and I feel cheated and my son has been cheated. And, you know, those are natural reactions that, frankly, very few want to express honestly, because I think then people say, and this has been said of me in various reviews, you know, you're selfish, you're cruel, you don't really care about your kid, how can you be so cold? It has absolutely nothing to do with that. These are natural feelings that you have. They're natural feelings you can have about any child, and they're certainly exacerbated when your child is different and disabled.
And that's one of the interesting ironies in all of this, is that they are natural feelings, and yet the public, even people you know, you think you know well, you're afraid that they're going to be judgmental, and oftentimes they are.
Well, you're right. Oftentimes, you know, they are, and this is something I grappled with as I wrote the book, but, you know, I've always been open about myself. I don't think the expression of faults and defects makes you bad. I think it makes you honest. People are complex. People are imperfect, but, you know, the general reaction to the book has been marvelous, but there is a segment who seems not to value honesty, and not to get too carried away. I mean, I see this in our society at large. You know, America's a very changing place, and rather than, you know, accepting that change and trying to figure out how to change, you know, we try to gloss it over with aphorisms that this is still the greatest country on earth, and it may be, but we are facing economic challenges, the likes of which we have never, ever faced before, and we just can't keep singing the national anthem and think everything is going to be okay. So it's like, we'd rather bathe ourselves in sentimentality and nostalgia than face up. And I think it's true in this case. Some people are fine. The honesty, the book is brutally honest about myself as a man and father, and about my feelings about Zach at various times. And people recoil from that. And I'm frankly, I guess I knew it was coming, but I guess I'm surprised, because I thought it would be appreciated.
And you're right, though, that it is in every segment of society that there is this large percentage of the population, maybe more than a majority of the population, that buys into this positive thinking, this sense that if you just think everything will be all right, somehow it'll be all right.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think that's healthy. I mean, I don't think that's healthy, and I don't think honesty, even if it's brutal honesty, even it reveals defects, is negative thinking. A great country is a country that is, you know, realized that it has to make radical change. And I think it's true of the person. Now, will I make changes? I don't know. But I had to come to reckoning with myself on this trip that I took with Zach, and I had to come to reckoning with what Zach could do and not do. And I think it may be painful, and it was. Looking at myself in the mirror as a man, as a father, was painful. Looking at Zach and thinking about him at times was painful. But once I broke through that, there was absolute beauty. And I think I did it, and I think we need to do it, you know, as a nation, because we're not. And as long as we don't face up to facts, nothing is going to change that has to change.
What was your denial about, your sense of denial about who Zach really was before you took this trip?
Well, I think it had to do with my own background. I came from a life of tremendous privilege. I grew up in Manhattan, went to private schools all my life. I came from a family and a milieu where you know, success was simply taken for granted. And, you know, my mother was very competitive with who was doing what, and I, you know, bought onto that train very, very quickly. So I grew up as being very ambitious and really realizing, for better or worse, and worse in some ways, that I was only defined by success, and the need for success became unquenchable, and it also became an addiction. And the problem with addictions, as everyone knows, is they're never, ever satisfied, but I couldn't get off the train. But I did want, you know, my kids to be similar to that, and I knew that Zach could not be, and perhaps I should have done a better job of realizing that, but I could not. It wasn't his fault, but I guess the toughest thing with Zach was and it still occurs, there's just many times I feel stuck. You know, we have played the same games for 20 years in some cases. We, in many cases, still communicate on the same level we did, you know, as when he was 10 or 11, although he's improved remarkably in his vernacular and his conversational abilities. But there was a lot of frustration, because I think for any parent, the hardest thing in the world is to feel that you're stuck with your child, and it's really not going to get that much better. You know, Zach bags groceries, and it's great that he's working, and he's really good at it. He's productive. He's not just there for the sake of being there, but he's going to be doing that the rest of his life. And, you know, that's hard for me to accept personally, and it's hard for me to think that, you know, that's what Zach is going to be doing, because it's rote and it's boring, and I wish he could do other things, but he really can't, except, you know, he does stock supplies somewhere else. But, you know, it doesn't seem very enriching to me, and I just wish he could do more.
More than that, there's also the nature of the relationship, that our relationship, particularly with our children, with family members, even with friends sometimes, that those relationships have some kind of an arc, that you grow, you change, they change, and there's a dynamic to the relationship that's ongoing, less so or certainly more difficult with Zach.
Yes, and remember, it was exacerbated by having a twin brother who was doing exactly that. I mean, you know, you want to see growth in your kids. You live through your kids, as I said. They certify you. They make you feel good. They make you feel that if you've done nothing else in life, you've been a good parent, and that's reflected in your kids growing and becoming independent and becoming their own men and then becoming fathers and husbands and then giving you grandchildren. And, you know, Jerry will do that. But I knew Zach was never going to do that, but I'm still confronted, you know, every day of my life with these two mirrors, one of which is totally unblemished and the other which is tragically cracked. So it's a reminder all the time that Zach's arc, if he had an arc, and there were times I didn't think he did, was going to be extremely different.
How has Jerry dealt with this, and what has that taught you?
Well, you know, Jerry is an amazing man. I mean, he's just very grounded. He's very down to earth, like myself. He's a fierce believer in loyalty. He's protective of Zach. He loves Zach. He understands, because we've talked about it, but he is the inheritor when I'm gone and their mom is gone. It's an awesome responsibility, but he is willing to accept it. But he feels guilt, you know. He feels at certain times, he says to himself, how come it was Zach and not me? How come I got that extra 3 minutes that made me whole? And then I also think there is this feeling of, you know, there but for the grace of God, go I. And I think Jerry was terrified in a way that, you know, is Zach within me? Am I going to have the same problems with Zach, even if it's on a milder scale? So it's complex feelings, but, you know, he articulates them in the book Father's Day, and I'm really, really, you know, very proud of him for having the courage to articulate about guilt and not wanting to be Zach, but also his willingness to be, you know, the inheritor.
Talk about this journey that you and Zach would take across the country.
Well, the situation was, it was 2007. It was the summer, and Zach's mother's family was going to Spain for 2 weeks, and, you know, Zach was reluctant to fly because he does get antsy and he does get ticky, and, you know, sitting still for that period of time is hard. And so he's going to be with me for 2 weeks, and I wanted to just do something special. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something that had meant a lot to me, and I hope would bounce off on him. And I had made 4 cross-country trips in my life, and all of them had deeply affected me. It's where I came up with the idea for Friday Night Lights about high school football in Texas. It's where I fell in love with my present wife, and I just thought it would also be a way of shifting Zach off his routine, which is very important to him, and, you know, wanting him to do something different. Now, there was a fundamental problem in that he really wanted to fly. So we had to get over that. But, you know, he adjusted well. The trip was very kind of, frankly, rocky at first. I was under a lot of stress. There were moments where Zach showed great lucidity and great promise. And then there were those moments where, as I said, I just felt stuck. But I think we got over the hump. And as the trip unfolded, I have to say, and I'm not just saying this for the sake of an author trying to say something momentous, I did see within him that I had never really noticed before, and really beautiful and powerful things about my son.
What were some of the things that came to light that you began to see about Zach on this trip?
Well, you know, pretty quickly I saw his ability for empathy. He had never shown that before. I mean, I had been to funerals with him when my parents died, and You know, he didn't really seem that sad. It didn't seem to process. He was, frankly, more interested in the people who were there because he loves people and has a prodigious memory for events and when he had last saw them. But he was very empathetic with me. He intuitively understood there were moments when I would get volatile and impatient and upset and drop the F-bomb. And he sort of said to himself, the way he says things to himself, and I never quite know how, you know, Dad needs to be comforted. And I want to be there for Dad in trying to settle him down. And he never lost his cool. He was always very, very steady. And he was remarkably, you know, helpful. If I got lost, I got lost a lot. Zach, because the way his mind works is a human GPS. And I lost valuable things during the trip. And I just will always remember, you know, his display of his fingers on my back and just saying, Dad, it'll be okay. And it did comfort me, and it did soothe me down. So there was empathy. His powers of observation were much more delineated than I ever thought. You know, half the time I thought he was staring out the window and talking to himself slightly, and I didn't know what he was thinking, if he was really thinking anything. And then he would talk about certain things he had seen, you know, during the trip. I found out that he doesn't simply have a yearning for independence. He needs as much independence as we can give him as parents. There's limitations, but that's because he's becoming whole. He is becoming a man, and he wants that independence, and he needs it so he can continue to grow. And there were just all sorts of touches during the trip, touches that were beautiful, that were kind, that were not sentimental, that helped open up powerful memories for me as I tried to reach closure. And it's mentioned in Father Day with my own parents, who died very, very traumatically back-to-back in 2001 and 2002. Certainly the most awful moment, the most difficult moment of my life, except for the birth of the twins.
Almost more than a sense of empathy, there's also this sense of him being very intuitive in a way that's different maybe from an intellectual approach that you were used to.
Well, that's, you know, that's definitely true. I mean, things just came out of his mouth that were sort of perfect summations of, you know, it could be a song, you know, that Peggy Lee song, is that all there is? And I just love that song. It's mournful, and I love kind of the monotone of her voice, and it's always haunting. And I asked Zach what he thought it meant, and, you know, he thought a little bit, and he said, well, I guess, you know, life is life. And he really, you know, it's perfect. Life, you know, is life. And he would say at other times, you know, that love is love, and that's really what love is, because love is indefinable. There was an intuition and an anticipation of, you know, how to act and how to behave at the right time. There was someone during the trip who said, you know, your son, Zach, just has a sixth sense for sincerity. He can feel it in people, and I've seen it. He gravitates towards the people who accept him and truly love him and, you know, don't just simply coddle him because he's different. And he stays away from, you know, from those who he thinks might react differently.
And it's fascinating to watch that in kids or even grown-ups like Zach, that ability to just know, to not have any kind of internal interference that's at play.
Well, he has no internal interference. I think that's because of the makeup of his brain. He's very right hemisphere oriented, which is all concrete thinking. The part of his brain that did get damaged and ravaged the most was the left hemisphere, which is almost all abstract thought. Zach does not think in abstract terms. He thinks in concrete terms, but it's not filtered by abstract thought. So it's very straightforward. He's straightforward. He doesn't lie. He says what he thinks, which actually can be very, very funny. You know, he's not threatened by people. He's not jealous. He has no Schadenfreude. He's happy for the success of others. I mean, you know, from one point I wasn't sure if he was my kid, because I'm completely the opposite. And I really, really am. But he is that way, and I think because of that, he has developed a certain, you know, intuition about life, including about his own condition, because I was determined on this trip to tell him what he was like. I did it because he's my son. And I didn't want to treat him any differently than I treated my two other sons. I've had a lot of heart-to-heart talks with them about things they do well and things they don't. And I wanted to you know, make Zach part of my family and not hide things from him. And he knew he was brain damaged. You know, he put it in the way that he puts it. He said, something's not right with my brain. And I was gratified that he knew that, because it can lead to a stronger conversation on, you know, where he should be, whether it's in a group home or whether living with his mother or with me. And I think that's important, that he have as much input, you know, as he can. And, you know, it just, on the other hand, I have to admit that when, you know, your child says to you, something's not right with my brain, it's crushing. I mean, it is crushing. And it, you know, if you don't feel sad and you don't feel mournful, well, then you're not, you know, a human being.
And yet he has these fascinating savant-like qualities.
Well, he is a savant. I mean, you know, savantism is defined by having exceptional kind of genius-like qualities in an otherwise darkened cognitive landscape, in which the mental comprehension of a savant can range anywhere from 8 to 5 down to 2, and they're capable of all sorts of eerie, spectacular things that on the surface make no sense because of their abilities of comprehension. Zach's is in the area of calendaring, so, you know, for instance, if you said, well, Zach, what day of the week was January 23rd, 1989, and he would pause for 2 seconds and be able to tell you. His recall of dates and events is just eerie. He virtually remembers every time he saw someone. It's the same with birthdays. A lot of times he'll see someone, and because he's concrete, you know, when is your birthday, where do you work, where do you live, what do you wear to work, he'll remember those birthdays forever. And I mean this. I mean, literally, I have a friend who calls him because he consistently forgets his mother's birthday. And, you know, he goes to Zach because he's the birthday, you know, repository. And I always thought that savantism was kind of a cute parlor trick. You know, we'd pull it out and say, you know, Zach, let's do some date play. But it's not. His memory really is present for him. He goes back to places, and that's what we did on the trip. We went back to places where we had lived. It was the worst route in American cross-country history. But in going back to those places, I almost felt as if he was reliving them. That is, if he was there, as if nothing had changed. And so memory is present for him, and memory is a way of making connection.
It's clearly the way he's grounded to things.
It is the way he's grounded. I mean, that's, you know, it's because of the way his brain is hardwired. And I say in the book, he kind of has this special hard drive just crammed full of various strands of information. And he has this ability, increasingly, actually, to pull out the right strands of information at the right time. And that is the way. And it may not seem logical to others, but, you know, I saw on the trip, it has a certain rhythm and logic to him, because that's how he connects, you know, the dots of a life. And, you know, life can be very, very complex and confusing for anybody.
What does he understand about what you do?
He knows that I'm a writer. You know, he knows that we talked a little bit. He said, didn't you win a Pulitzer Prize or something? You know, and many people say, wow, you won a Pulitzer. You know, Zach's never, you know, he says, did you win a Pulitzer or something? What was it? And I said, well, I did win a Pulitzer, Zach. And, you know, the normal reaction is, God, that's great. What did you win it in? And then he started talking about how I went to a health club in Chicago and never showed up. You know, so it's not that he, you know, bleeds his chest for his dad or feels proud. He knows that I've written books. He knows that I've written Friday Night Lights. So there's certainly an awareness, but it's not, you know, broached in terms of, you know, Dad, I'm really proud of you. Dad, that was a great book. You know, Dad, you've accomplished a lot. It's just sort of, all right, this is some of the stuff that, you know, Dad does, and I guess that's cool, and he's a writer, but, you know, life goes on. So he doesn't let me, you know, sentimentalize, as I often do. He just cuts it off because maybe he doesn't understand, but that's not the way his life works. He's not a sentimental child. He just keeps plowing on. He's always on to the next thing, which I think is great because it is his way of propelling forward.
How does he see his brother, Jerry?
You know, he loves his brother. They're always going to be brothers, so there's, you know, they can have spats. He certainly is aware of things that Jerry can do that he will never do, like Jerry going to college and Jerry having a girlfriend, and I know that affects him, and I think that makes him feel left out to some degree. But they're, you know, they're very, very close, and they always you know, will be. I think he idolizes Jerry in a sense, but as he grows older, you know, he's developing more and more of his own personality, and you know, connecting more and more to his own world.
What was your relationship with your father like?
Well, my relationship with my own father, and that's a part of Father's Day, because, you know, I think when you write a book about your relationship with your father and son, it's inevitable, particularly on a road trip where thoughts go so deep, that you're going to write about your own relationship with your father. My father contracted leukemia in the summer of 2001. I remember taking the taxi to the hospital, Mount Sinai in New York, and watching him sob and admitting for the first time in his life that he was terrified and scared. And, you know, he's my dad. He was a pillar of strength, and I could not process that. I could not handle that. I withdrew. He was terrified of dying and became very, very belligerent, and I think he kind of hated me at the end, and I, you know, do selfishly admit, and frankly many people do this and will never admit it, thought about myself and inheritance and all these other things. And, you know, it was a tragic ending to what up until then had been a really spectacular, beautiful, very, very close relationship. But one of the things about road trips is you work things out, and frankly, if I came to a sense of closure, not only with my mother and father, since they died back-to-back, my mother had lost her mind at that point and was confined to a wheelchair, it actually was Zach who helped bring about that sense of closure with something he did in California.
Mm-hmm. Talk about that.
We ended up staying at the Beverly Hills Hilton, and I did pick it purposely because it was the last time we had been together as a family, and Thanksgiving 2000, my parents were there, and they were both then in very, very, you know, good shape, although you could feel that my mother was having trouble holding on. And my sister was there, my wife was there, my sister's husband was there, and my niece was there. And we had an absolute blast. You know, we went to San Simeon and had spent Thanksgiving in Cambria, which is a charming town on the California coast. And it was wonderful, and the sense of togetherness was wonderful, and sadly, it turned out to be the last time we ever were together as a family, because a year later, my parents were dead. And Zach was staying with Jerry, and I went into Zach's room, and there, gently propped up against the television set, it was this picture. And I looked at it, and it was a picture of my parents together, smiling and beaming, and there was a little inscription to the side that said, you know, a good time had been had by all. And, you know, I sort of said, where did this come from? And then I figured it out. Zach had taken the picture from our house in Philadelphia, from where we left. He had, you know, secreted it into his knapsack. He had brought it along for 3,000 miles without telling me, and had put it there because he said, you know, well, I just thought it would be a nice way of remembering them. And I was blown away because that's such a deliberate act. I mean, there's a lot of steps you have to take. And, you know, looking at that picture and looking at the smile on my parents, you know, brought back a flood of great memories about the trip and how beautiful it was and how essentially special and complex and beautiful people, you know, my parents was. And I really think without that picture, it would not had been the same, and it was sort of Zach who led me, you know, like to the promised ground in a sense, and I was just absolutely blown away by that. I will never ever forget the touch and the dignity, and, you know, as I said, the deliberate effort in his own way to help me find some sense of peace.
Buzz Bissinger, the book is Father's Day, A Journey into the Mind and Heart of My Extraordinary Son. Buzz, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Well, I thank you. Your questions were terrific, and I appreciate it.
Buzz Bissinger, Father's Day. Thank you so much.